Today's episode is from a meetup I hosted in Toronto back in 2019. I'm going to teach you the two questions you need to ask yourself that will give you control of your life. Let me know if you want to hear more of these full-length meetups, and don't forget to join me every Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time for my free training. You can text my number and email in the description to join. You can find my text number and email in the description to join.
This is Entrepreneurs the Playbook.
Well, thanks for coming. Just start with some questions, man. I'd love to answer.
Yeah, I'm sure your time is like...
No, that's good. This is why I'm here.
You know what? I was like, when you first started talking about coming to Toronto, I was like looking at your feed and I was thinking about my life and I was like, man, what is it like? How can a connection be made, or what's the benefit? Because at first I really just enjoyed just watching you put down positivity in like the most humble way and like sincere stuff. Only a few people like put that just authentic, sincere, whether you use this for money, whether you use this for like just for your day-to-day life, like it benefits. So I was like, man, how can I just naturally like make that connection? And you know, at first I just appreciated it, but then you had put a post where you're like talking about crypto. And I was like, I had like a year and a half ago, I had like taken some cash, I put it in the market, like almost at its peak. And I lost a lot of it, right?
Yeah.
Half of it. And then I built back up a little bit, and then I like put it on the side in US Tether. And then I saw one of your posts where you were like, oh, I don't even bother with this going up and down in the market.
Yeah.
I just provide the axe. I just provide like the tools.
Picks and axes, right, exactly.
And I was like, yeah, you know what? Like, I enjoy seeing it, and it's good, like, if you want to dally like a little bit, like just to keep yourself sharp on what's going on. But I'm like, that's not what I want to do with my money. I'm not a natural gambler.
Right.
I've never made a lot of money gambling in my life.
So yeah.
It's not my natural thing. But I'm like, you know, you said you provide access. So at that point, I was like, man, maybe you could give me some info on how to get that going. From that point, I looked at some things where you like provide crypto or you provide cash for people looking to buy into the market. So there's one thing like Bitcoin traders or something online where you act as like a seller, a buyer and seller. And so I was gonna jump into that, but I've just really been busy with my day-to-day work that I haven't like pulled the trigger. I don't want to do it and just lose what little cash I wanted to put towards it.
Yeah.
So I wanted to like just be a little conservative. But you know, that was my first insight of how you could directly maybe give me some information on what you think is a nice way to approach like the business aspect of that.
Yeah.
Buying and selling. Because at the end of the day, I wanted to do something that could maybe get me out of the city, out of Toronto.
Hi.
For the winter.
Hey, how you doing? Good.
Michael. Good.
Hey, Michael. Finally, someone without a J in their name.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's interesting because I think it goes along the context of paying attention, which harnesses the power of intention. So what I've learned to do over the years is look at things differently, right? So change the way you look at things, the things you look at change. If everybody's, you know, I had a mentor that told me once, the guy shining your shoes gives you a stock tip, sell all your stock. And it, you know, it's really resonated with me over the years, you know, like money doesn't disappear. This is where it all starts for me. This is where people get so lost, right? Money doesn't disappear. And what does that mean? The housing market goes down, the stock market goes down, the crypto market goes down, right? Well, that money goes somewhere. It does not disappear, right? That money does not disappear. And what happens is we don't know where it goes. I do. It goes to the 1%. It goes to the guys that know they make money off of transactions. They make money off of money. They make money off of the things that are needed in order to have a transaction, right? And so are you going to be an exclusive supplier of that, or you know, one of the multiple suppliers? But the guys who make real money are dealing with a step beyond what everyone else is dealing with. They're not worried about whether it goes up or down. They're worried about how many transactions are taking place. Right? They're worried about where does the money disappear. And it's easy to find where it disappears because you can go back in history and see exactly with all the different types of market, when a market goes down, whatever the market is, who makes the money? Like everybody knows how to make money on the way up. Right now, they may not be conservative and disciplined enough to make it on the way up. So, you know, I'll give you the magic formula to making money on the way up. Take your money out. Let a piece ride and have those goals set before you start. So for me, it's okay. If I'm going to play the up market, which is fine because at times we know the market's going up. So I'm going to put 100 grand in. Minute I get my 100 grand in profit, or maybe it's 50, right? I just have a timing chart. Now there's no emotion involved. It's my expectation of what I want out of the deal, right? And I might leave 10, 20, 25% in to as a lottery ticket, right? For the rest of my life, I'm going to own Amazon. You know, just but I'm not going to pay any attention, because the other part of money not disappearing is how much energy, time, and emotion and attention, which is the critical catalyst to getting the power of intention. How much attention do I have to spend on watching that shit? But I realized I wanted to focus my attention on doubling the amount of money as fast as I could. And I wanted to race my money, meaning it's all well and good to say you want your money to make money for you. That's great, but if you're paying more attention to your money making money and it's taking more time, resources, and risk, then you're a fool. Your money's not making money for you. You're making money for you, right? And that's what happened to me. I had all these investments and I was so good at making money. I took my attention off of what I'm good at and I started putting on my money making money and it went down, right? And now I not only wasn't doubling the amount of money I made as fast as I could, but I was losing all the money that I was paying attention to over here, right? Because, you know, I didn't know what I was doing in the stock market. I don't know what I'm doing in the crypto market. But, you know, I tell everyone right now, you know, I like to talk about asking for mentorship, why you guys are here right now, right? You get situational knowledge, acceleration, exponential growth by talking to people that have been here before, 30 years more experience than you guys have. That's worth something. Look, when the market goes down, which it will, I'm going to spend my time finding Warren Buffett, right? I'm going to spend my time. Well, I'm not going to spend my time looking at how can I make money on a down stock market. No, I'm going to spend my time talking to whoever I can that I know, saying, hey, I just need 5 minutes with Warren Buffett. Just give me his cell phone number. Can I get his phone number? And I'll get to him because I'm persistent and consistent. And I've built relationships. I'll do whatever it takes. If I have to donate 25 grand to a charity to get a lunch with, you know, Warren Buffett, or, you know, there's definitely a way to get to Warren Buffett and get his attention for me. If all I did was every day post videos until someone told him, hey, have you ever seen that crazy guy that wants to meet you? I'll get to him. But when I get to him, all I got is one question. All right, how do I make money? How do I make money in this? Because I know you know. I know you know. Why do I have to guess? I know you know. Just tell me. I got $6 million. Where can I make money as this thing falls? How do I do it? And that's what people ask me for, right? That's why I have a coaching program. That's why I have speeches and videos. I don't have to ask for money because I can make you money, right? You make somebody money. I've had someone, these two guys from Venezuela, literally flew out to California. I kept saying, you got to fly out to California. No, we need to meet you in person. They literally flew out and just to say thank you to me. I had no idea what I did. They said, well, I'm watching the videos. Things were going bad and it turned us around. We got this multi-million dollar business now. We want to put you on our board. All right. I didn't ask for it. I'm providing value. This stuff is not hard. You just have to look at it a different way, right? You have some money, you want to put it in crypto, then pick a percentage that's what I call playing craps money. I'm not a gambler, but I like to play craps. So I'll go to Las Vegas and I'll take $500, which is probably what I'd spend taking my wife out to a dinner and movie now, unfortunately, you know, with another couple for sure, right? Anyway, I take $500 and I play craps as the same as I went to dinner and whatever. And the only difference is I could end up making $1,000 for going to dinner instead, right? I mean, but if it's gone, it's not like I go back into my pocket. That was entertainment money. Your crypto money is entertainment money.
Yeah, so, and I'm not even worried about the entertainment portion. Yeah. I just do that. I was thinking of that so that my attention, I like you kind of corrected that in this moment, but I was thinking about it so I would have like a certain amount of attention to what the market is doing, mm-hmm. and it would keep me engaged.
Yeah.
So, okay, what coins are out? What's happening? Which you just corrected because it would take a lot of time. So my question—
there's so many variables.
You know, one thing why I stood back a little bit was like, right now I have a hustle. I like personal train, I teach classes, and listen, it provides something more than just the money. It provides the human contact that I need and the social aspect that I need, and it keeps me around health, which I put above almost everything else. So it provides a lot, but I have a boss and I have a general manager and I have people. I have an independent mode of thought. I know how I can see how things run properly. I know how the correct way to treat people. I know, so people telling me what to do or how I should approach things or if something goes wrong, why it went wrong, like, doesn't always vibe with me, okay? But it's theirs, it's not mine. And it's such a unique thing that I kind of teach and I've been successful in. And like, it's weird, it's like I'm trapped. Because all my friendships are in this space, and they're the gatekeepers to my space. Even if I were to leave, and the natural thing, oh, start your own thing, Jeff. The thing that I teach and I do has a license to it. I can't even open it in the city if I wanted to. The people who do it, as much as they might like me, they also like me because of what I do for them. So if I can't do that for them, it probably doesn't generate the same amount of energy, and I don't get the same amount of just natural ease in terms of like relationship and building. And it's a big part of it. It's like my tool for my social. So I'm doing that and I enjoy it and I put all my attention and I work like 7 days. But I'm also thinking of like, maybe if I just alleviate the money aspect first, then I can be a little more creative with how I do it. Maybe I can like go to Cali for a month and work and like teach a few classes and like start to build up something social, or just go back to like power training or whatever. And the one thing with the crypto was like, I'm gonna be hand to mouthing $100 on like $1,000 play. Someone's gonna want, you know, half a crypto, so I'm gonna make a couple $100. Someone's gonna want this, so I'm gonna make $50. But I was like, I wouldn't replace what I'm doing to make the same money hand to hand in crypto, and it's gonna take me all day to make the same amount of money going from one person to the other. So I was curious, like, did you automate your crypto system? Can you teach me how to automate it so I can like can you put me on something like that? Or really, to be honest with you, because I haven't put that into motion, my one question was, what are you doing today to like generate cash?
That's a good question. Yeah. So number one, I'm gonna hit a couple points. Health is the number one thing you should be worried about. And I reiterate, no matter how young you are, it's the biggest mistake that I made in my career, is I put my family first before my health, right? And nothing happens. The better you feel, the more inspired you are, the cleaner the connection to that which inspires you. Health is essential. I don't have any automation of anything. What I do have is the easiest way. I believe profit first, then purpose, then profit. Profit first, purpose, then you'll have passion about it. So what do I do to make money? I look to see what I can buy, right? With all the relationships I have, I look to see what I can buy low and sell higher, create a margin. That's the best way. And I usually have something that is pre-sold. So how do we do that? We can go and say, what are you looking for? Well, how can I help you, right? But go to people that have big things, right? It's the same thing of me wanting to go find Warren Buffett, right? You don't have to know. I go find rich people where rich people hang out and ask rich people, what can I get you? What are you looking for? Man, I'm looking for a yacht. I'm looking for a Ferrari. Look, we're all smart enough, right? How much you want to spend?
on a crypto?
No, no. Asking the guy,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
You know, I have you ever heard my car video that I did? So yeah, reverse it, 1 to 3, 3 to 6, yeah. So,
yeah, but I don't know the details.
Yeah, so here's the easiest way. I mean, and we could do this here too, but I went on the internet and I said fastest selling cars, 3,000 and under, right? So I went to all the different websites, Car Guru, Auto Trader, and I found how many days it took to sell. And I found, you know, this older BMW that literally the average was 3 days at $3,000. So I knew that car would sell, right? The market is there. So then I went on and I searched that car for all the people selling it. And what I did, there's 52 people I found with that car that would sell like this. And I offered them all $1,000 cash. You know, 51 of them told me to F off, stop wasting their time. And one said, yeah, get me the cash today. Boom, just made $2,000. So then I went and found cars for $6,000 the same way. Took my $3,000, gave $3,000 offers. Everybody told me to F off except for one guy. Brought the $6,000, right? Boom. Keep on edging up. Meanwhile, everyone else is working their ass off all month, and I made $12,000 my first month. Here's another one. You know, I did this last weekend in my office. I said, all right, let's just take 3 minutes. Think about if I gave you $1,000 today, all three of you guys, if I gave you $1,000 today, I want you just to take 3 minutes and think about how you could turn it into $3,000 by the end of the month. Either buying and selling or something or whatever. So we had 20 people, all of them came up with like great ideas. One guy had like a friend that, you know, sold these things and he could flip this. And another guy was gonna be the first person to show up at garage sales, you know, the first guy to get the good stuff. And another guy was gonna be the last guy, which I thought was really clever because usually people are selling not for money, but to get rid of shit. So if you're the last one to show up, he was just gonna go the big truck, get everything he could for free or for pennies on the dollar, and then figure out what he could sell. And so literally everyone had all these great ideas how to make money. Meanwhile, I said, okay, terrific. I said, because I just proved you how I'm making money. I said, I'm going to give each of you guys $1,000. And at the end of the month, you're going to pay me back my $1,000. Plus, we're going to split your profits with your best ideas. Guess what? 20 guys, I'm going to make more than $20,000. In the next month, you can come back to my club and I'll back you again. But you got to bring another friend. Now I'm at $40,000. Now, these are easy ideas, but it's changing the way you look at things because people don't pay attention. Or if they do, they're paying attention to the wrong things. They're paying attention to shit that you could lose your money or shit that wastes your time. Stuff that takes a really long time. The best thing about what you said, Jeff, that I loved was, hey, I need the personal interaction and fulfillment of helping people with their health. I'm good with that. Like, that's a priority, right? That's why I do the stuff that I do for the same reason. You're like, I know you're short on time. This here feeds my soul, right? It polishes, it feeds my soul, gives me inspiration so I can go do the other stuff as well, right? I'm constantly lowering the bar. I believe in consistent behavior, like every single day doing stuff for, you know, if I was going to do your crypto deal, I'd say, look, just spend 10 minutes a day, 7 days a week. Everybody got 10 minutes. Watch what happens when you pay attention for 10 minutes. Just start Googling and looking. All kinds of other opportunities will come up that are much easier, much more profitable.
Yeah, it always leads to something more.
That attention's awesome. All right, Jess, you have questions on there, don't you?
kind of steering away from more business.
Yeah, it's fine.
Business aspect, more like
it's all related, man.
I wanted to know if you've ever had an identity crisis.
Identity crisis?
An identity crisis. And how did you manage that? Or if you haven't, how would you manage kind of rediscovering your new self and kind of detaching yourself from your past self? For yourself, like, I've always been the athlete, and that's everything's rested on that. And now, as much as I run with Nike and do all that, that's a part-time thing. It's not really my mainstay. But now I kind of feel like it's holding me back because I'm still living on who I was.
Yeah.
Like everybody that used to know me.
So, identity crisis, yes, I've gone through that. I think always we're into understanding the truth about ourselves, which is that pursuit of our potential. So one of the biggest and hardest things that we do when we're younger is we worry about what other people think about us, right? And when most of the time, most people are just worried about what people are thinking of them. They're not worried about you, right? And as much as you think everybody thinks of you as the runner guy or whatever, they don't. There's out of 100 of your closest friends that you grew up here with, they have 100 different opinions of you. They have 100 different opinions of you, and none of them matter. So what you're dealing with is your own self-image of what you think, right? People would think. They just don't. And so what you want to do is find your frequency, which consists of three things. Number one, your consistency is the force of signal, right? How strong is your signal? How far will you reach? Second is the bandwidth. How many channels are you going to connect to? You know, runner, business person, real estate, work, like whatever channels you're going to hit to. And then the clarity, right? So the clarity is of, you know, how fine, you know, does that station come through? So, you know, I'm constantly looking at my frequency, which is my identity, because what people can connect to me at. So simply, how far does it reach? How many channels does it hit? And how clear are people getting? I mean, so many things I say, people don't know what the fuck I'm talking about. No, honestly, like some of the stuff I go back and I'm like, man, I got like 10% of that. You know, that's too high level. Well, I'm not clear. That's not good. Right? So you got to have all those different things and what you do for your own identity. So for me to have my identity, I have to have values. So for me, it starts with I am gratitude. I am forgiveness. I am accountability. I am inspiration. And all the other judgments and conditions that I put upon myself of like, I'm rich. Like people just think of me for my money or for a sports guy. I went through like this derived career of, you know, identity is just, you know, being rich or a lawyer. Then in the technology world, a CEO of the smartphone, they were like, oh, you know that guy, the smartphone guy. Well, they called them convergence devices. They weren't even called smartphones. I'm so old. And then beyond that, then I went to Lee Steinberg, right? Which was the worst identity because I was always like, well, you know, Aikman's boy or Lee Steinberg's guy, right? And then I was Warren Moon's partner for 11 years. You know, nobody knew my name. So I was having an identity crisis. Until I started just worried about my own frequency, I started realizing that people, they like me for who I am, for the value I bring in their life. But in the end, they're part of me, but they only are concerned about themselves. And it's hard to understand, especially when you have kids, right? Like in the end, your kids love you, but in the end, the kids are about themselves. They're not for me, they're through me. And all my friends are through me. So what do I have to do? I have to expand myself. And my identity is just between these 6 inches. It's nowhere else. But it is understanding how far am I reaching my frequency, how broad of a spectrum of channels can I reach, and how clear am I being? But I just stick to my values. And I was all over the place when I was having an identity crisis because I wanted to be everything for everyone. I wanted everyone to love me. I always pleased people. And all I was doing was diminishing my own capacity, diminishing myself, which, you know, didn't allow any light to shine for me, but it definitely didn't liberate anybody else to show their light. So I think, you know, finding your own frequency is the key to your identity and not worrying. It's a hard bite because I'm 51 years old and sometimes somebody says something and it bugs the shit out of me. You know why it bugs me? Because I think it's true about myself. You know, it bugs me and I'm like, instead of, you know, projecting onto them, like, why do they think that of me? I always ask, why do I think that of myself? You know, I'm not like that. Yeah, you are. That's why you're so worried about it. So make the change. One other thing that we do, I just thought of is, you know, we forget that people know us from a period of time. So, you know, especially, I remember I went to a charitable event when I first started raising money for the Unstoppable Foundation. So my very first event, my birthday party, one of my uncles who, like, I was only around when I was younger. You know, and when I was younger, I was a hustler, straight out street hustler, manipulator, all about only money and taking. And so here I was now, grown up, 50 years old. he really had very little contact with me in the last 25 years other than what my mom probably told him what I was doing. But he sat at my family table and like my wife lost her lid because he said it at the function. He said, oh, how much money is David making off of this? And my wife like flipped the lid because she knew how much I was sacrificing for the charity, how much, you know, and I wasn't mad at all because it, to me, it was like, of course that's what he would think. Because the David that he knows is that David, right? And when I had to forgive myself for being that way and evolving to what I am today, and also being confident that I'm not like that anymore, right? I'm not looking for angles anymore. And, you know, I'm trying to encourage other people to have faith, right? What we think, say, do, believe in the unconscious competencies, have faith in what we are and how we can help people and still make money.
So what was the big thing, or maybe it wasn't a big thing, maybe it happened over time, but what made you go from like, all right, I'm a hustler, manipulator, all that stuff, to I want to be of service, I want to give back?
Yeah, it happened over time. I mean, I think I always had the intention, even when I was manipulating people and selling people and overselling them, that I wanted to help. And I think 90 some percent of the people that, you know, are doing things the wrong way, they really have good intentions. You know, like mine was to buy my mom a house and a car, right? I just didn't know any better. I didn't know anything. So when I started to, the one catalyst when I had everything, right, I started acting inappropriately and people were bringing that up. And then I started seeing the effects of really not doing the right things. Right. And then, so for me, it was an evolution of, okay, what changes do I need to make? You know, screwing up and my wife almost leaving me and telling me you better take stock in who you were. And so that one catalyst of, you know, taking some time, we have talked before you got here, sometimes it's just 10 minutes a day to pay attention to something. My wife pretty much scared the crap out of me to pay attention to who I was. And that's when I just started outlining, like, I am lost. Like, I can't believe, like, I have all this shit and I'm not happy and I want to live my life this way. And so over the last, you know, 15 years, more and more of the onion has peeled itself and revealed itself. And like, you know, just the other day I admitted something that, you know, was really difficult to admit, but like, you know, I got in this huge lawsuit and it took me 9 years to forgive the guy. But like, I completely blanked out the fact that at one time during when he had done wrong to me, he had offered me my money back, but my partner said, no way, my wife will leave me, you can't do that. But you know, that kind of got discounted. Look, I'm 100% accountable for what I am, and meditation has helped me constantly trying to illuminate who I am. Just tell people, you know, whatever it is, the truth of who I am. And I'm still on that journey. I think one of the biggest things that I tell people is, because you know, the internet's great, it makes you look better than you are, or it could make you look worse than you are. But like, I'm on my journey, right? I'm on my journey and it's okay. I'm enjoying that journey and I want everyone to enjoy that journey. But every day I'm afraid, every day I'm fighting the same kind of things and trying to figure out different level of faith, more inspiration. I think one of the things I do really well is stay inspired. I stay really inspired all day long. I have more energy than I've ever had. I help people. Yeah, number one is health. So I think a big change is that to be inspired, you got to like physically feel good. And that if, you know, I want to live my life an eternal life, I want to live this one the best I can. And if you're not feeling well, it's hard to be inspired, right? And so why not prioritize? If you're not here and you're not doing that. So the second one is understand the ego. It's a big one about being inspired. Is the ego is what corrodes our connection to that which inspires us. So to first have the awareness of the ego is critical. Like, start defining it for yourself. Start saying, okay, my ego has a need. Like one for me was need to be offended, right? Need to be inferior and superior to people. I just had this need to be right, need to be angry, guilty. So when I started to define my ego with the needs that it had, I could raise my awareness and then I put the brakes on. And then that's where the third thing of meditation, of finding peace. It doesn't have to be like full on theta meditation like I do, but like just being centered of knowing, okay, number one, I'm physically healthy. Two, I know when I'm not in the trajectory of inspiration, creating my connection. And then three, okay, I know the road to go on. Those are the three top things. If you can do that, it'll be incredible how much will come through you and how good you the enlightenment that, like, I'm surprised even sometimes where I just am able to handle things that I'm like, and it's really, for me, it's this analogy, put on the brakes. Like, I literally don't move out of the way.
I think those last two you just said, a lot of your story, I think, are inspired by that. It's about self-awareness. And you said, I think everybody's just trying to figure themselves out. And that second one you were talking about is just trying to gain a sense of clarity, figure out where you are. And then the last one is, I think you were saying, where you're going to go. So what's the plan? What are your goals? I feel like I feel that a lot in your story.
Yeah, so I'm like tuning my car, seeing where I've been and where I want to go, right? Yeah, that's great.
So yeah. When you look at that deeper purpose, right, at the end of the meditation, two questions. The ego, is that we use to, like, stay focused and, like, drive towards it? Like, do you get, is it that clear where you can just bring it to the ego and go out and do it? And how much time do you spend on the various desires that come up on a day-to-day, week-to-week?
Good questions.
Yeah,
so first one, I believe in allowance. And the analogy I use towards allowance isn't sitting back and allowing things to happen. Allowance is like when I was a little boy, you do this, 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 and this, and you're gonna get this, right? It's an allowance. It's a step beyond action. People think allowance is the step before action, that, you know, I'm allowing this to happen. No. You gotta take this action, right? And so, Jeff, the second part of your question comes first to me is, how do you figure out how much time to spend on the different things? Number one, you have to be a student of your calendar. You have to have your own philosophies and study time, which is studying your calendar. You have to understand there's two different times. There's the man-made construct of time, which is 24 hours. Everyone at this vibration lives at 24 hours. Nobody does it. Then there's the infinity of time. Unfortunately, no human being has the capability of fully understanding or proving the infinity of time, but you have to understand and try to figure out the relativity of the infinity of time to your life. The variables are just infinite as well to time. So if, like, inspiration changes time in the infinity of time. So, right, if I'm super compelling, this will be the fastest hour of your life. If everything that I said was, like, you know, scratching a chalkboard, this would be a really long hour. But yet, in the man-made construct, it's still 1 hour. So when I'm dividing out, what do I focus in on? What do I pay attention to? How do I harness the field of intention to allow it to happen? I go ahead and study the 24 hours that I'm going to spend. I study it, meaning I pay deep, deep attention to it. What am I doing in person, on the phone, via email, and all the media, radio, print, TV, social media? What am I doing? And then I study the free space of my calendar for productivity, which is adding value, right? I'm adding value when I'm productive, whatever it is. And two, accessibility. How accessible am I to everybody else? And how am I accessing what I want? That's the flow of allowance. That's the currency of faith, currency of money too. But going forward, I study that 24 hours of pragmatic time and then institute the rules of inspiration so I can bend it, right? In other words, enjoy. The more I enjoy my time, the more I can play with time, the infinite time. But it's still 24 hours. So productive and accessible, I start with sleep. Why? Because sleep is the most consistent thing that we do in our lifetime. It's the only thing that I think is a habit that's a complete unconscious competency, breathing and sleeping. So what does that mean? Right? Right? They're activities, man. They're activities. So learn how to breathe.
What time do you normally go to bed at?
So that's a great question. I start differently. I wake up at 4 a.m. So people ask me, yeah, every day. So people ask me why what time you go to bed? That's not a concern of mine. My concern is all focusing on what do I gotta do today to make sure I wake up tomorrow at 4 a.m. So what I've learned is study backwards. If my goal is to wake up at 4 a.m., then, you know, I gotta watch what I eat, watch what I drink. That doesn't say I don't drink and I don't eat, right? Even the wrong things, but I'm very calculating, you know, balancing, going, okay, man, if we're going to do this, you know, if I'm having two martinis, you know, it's not going to be easy to get up at four. as easy, but I'm so conditioned.
How often do you break that?
Never.
Break your four.
Well, only, sorry, never, wrong answer. almost never. If I go to bed anywhere past 2 a.m., I'll go till 7 a.m. So there's some nights I have to, because of work, you know, I'll stay out too. And those have gotten a lot less because I just, it's so critical for me to wake up at 4 a.m. because I'm studying my calendar. I know where the productivity and accessibility comes from. I used to tell people, and it drove my wife especially insane, I used to tell her, when I go to bed at 11 and I wake up at 4, and she roll her eyes. Because we were together in New York last week, and I think, and I try to stay on the same time zone. So when I'm in New York, I wake up at 7 a.m. and I go to bed at 2, or, you know, I try to stay up to 2, but it must have been like one whatever, and you know, I'm trying to get through 300 emails, and computer just, I passed out. I had nothing left in the gas. He seen me at the airport standing up, and he literally had to hold me and say, "Dave, sit down," because I'm out. But I know if I live my life where I run out, no problem waking up at 4. No problem at all waking up at 4. I do, like this morning, I had to wake up at 3:20 because I had to be at my office at 4 to get to the airport to fly here. So that means usually I'll catch up a half hour or an hour of sleep if I wake up before 4, like on the plane. But that's all studying. Like the weekend, I was studying my calendar for this week so much because I wanted to be so productive and accessible. And I do incredible things, and I limit my time. So minimums, everyone lower your bar, right? Pick out your favorite things. You know, health, for me, 1 hour a day, minimum. Everything's minimum to me, right? No resistance. If you use minimums, there's no resistance. The minute you use a straight number, you create a resistance. If I say I'm gonna work out an hour, there's an anxiety actually that's attached to say I'm gonna work out an hour. You say I'm gonna work out a minimum of an hour, it changes the energy of it. But when I started, it was, I'm gonna put my tennis shoes on today. And I ended up at the gym for 15 minutes on the elliptical, which ended up 30 minutes on the elliptical, first day. But every day I'm overachieving. So I just prioritize what I'm doing. My family, so health number one, minimum of an hour a day with health. Like stretching, just varying, whatever it is. Two, my family, so I went to my wife and I asked her, minimum, how much time do you need on my attention? Every day, 7 days a week, that's what's gonna give us an exponential intimacy. She said 30 minutes, so then I gave my 9-year-old the same thing. And then the teenage girls, I asked for 5, and they gave me 2. And then my mom gets 1 minute. And this isn't OCD, this literally isn't. It's building an unconscious competency for what's most important in my life, just like sleeping and breathing. I always am on those things right there. Then I go to my day, and whatever I'm prioritizing, it could be, you know, Instagram, or it could be coaching, or it could be speaking, or it could be the playbook, or it could be all of these different little things that I'm gonna spend. But then I put on the other side, 5-minute objectives for my phone calls, 20-minute objectives for my meetings. Then one of the things we're instituting is, you know, every city I carve out at least 1 hour for meetups to do this. You know, that personal contact to do this. And but this will be the juice to drive me all the way through everything else. Time is so critical. People, they don't even, the number one thing, Justin will tell you, so every Monday morning meeting I do, whether I'm there or not, I have everyone study their calendar for 3 minutes at the beginning of the meeting. And you should see how prepared my business is now. And they find lists of things. So you spend 3 minutes studying the calendar, and 15 to 20 to 25 minutes, all the things that are wrong in our schedule, and that would have cost us thousands, hundreds of thousands of dollars sometimes, screwed up entire days. You know, there's just a list of stuff. When you study your calendar, you elevate the awareness, the vibration, and you just see that deeper side of the picks and axes of your day. And it helps you with the inspiration. You know, productivity and accessibility are two things you should always look at.
So you schedule everything?
No. just put minimums of time on the priorities of what I do. But I do study the white space of my calendar, and then leave in the white space of my calendar, I leave reaction time, right, to go to my do it now folder. So the way I believe in time is to stay as present as possible. In order to stay as present as possible, because that's truly the only time we have, is right now. Right? So you tell me to do something. In my mind, I say, can I do it now? If I can do it now, I do it, even if I'm doing something else. So like, even if priority wise, like my phone would ring while we were doing this, and I'd look and I'd see, you know, oh, it's my wife. I'm gonna do it now. Right? And so I'll say that. Now, if I couldn't do it, let's say it was my brother and he texted me, I'd go ahead and forward the text to my own text messages, because what I do is that's one of the do it now folders I have. So I just flip through when I have white space in my calendar and I start prioritizing that I either email myself or texted myself. Sometimes, to save even more time, I'll literally, and I don't care, I'll choose, if I have a do it now item and we're talking here and I don't have time to find my email or want to put it in. So Mike Allen is my COO. He's at the top of my box. I might just text him, because remember, if you text someone, you get it at the top of your box. And so what's the worst thing that happens? He texts me going, what the is this? Now I just got double reminder. I'm gonna do it now. And it, you know, no one's not going to be your friend because you like gave a two-word thing saying, you know, get Jeff referral. You know, Mike Allen like, who's Jeff? Why? But I'm not going to forget to get Jeff the referral that I promised him. So those do it now, productive, excessive, student of your calendar will help enhance. If you can really utilize your time, man, the world opens up. I do so much more than I used to do. Most common thing people ask me, how do you stay so inspired and how are you involved in so much? Like all the businesses.
Time working on your like I know I'm more productive when I plan my day in advance, but I also am scared that I'm missing on authentic opportunities. Like I'm missing like authentic connections by always pushing.
I disagree. The opposite.
That's the waiting approach that you don't recommend.
Yeah, me, I'm a asking a track guy. So you want enough opportunities to overload you, just all one person a day. I preach this all the time, and I do preach and not even teach this one. Just try for 30 days to find one person. I don't care where you meet them, and just say, do you know anyone or anything that can help me? This is what I'm doing. One person a day, because everybody knows at least 1,000 people and 1,000 things to help you. At the end of the month, you have 30,000 more people in your network that can help you. Nobody says no. And, you know, constitute that with how can I be of service, or picking, like, it's not just to people. Like, the universe is listening to you, right? It's listening to you. So when you stop and throw something away, or you hold a door open, or you smile at someone, or you take extra time, you know, I promise you, more spontaneity than anyone. And they're like, the stories that I have during the day is like, oh my God, because I'm attracting it to myself. And I'm not, you know, I'm not creating resistance, shortages. What Jeff is saying is creates resistance, shortages, and voids in your life, believe it or not, even though he's explaining that he wants to, you know, because the minute you hear the word, well, I don't want to do that because I'm afraid, that's what the ego is made of. Fear, a fear of loss, fear of whatever. No. That's the exact opposite of what you're supposed to be doing. And so many times we're doing the exact opposite. In other words, we're putting faith in what we don't want and then surprised about what we don't want. Or we manifest what others want for us, and then we're pissed off and resentful that we've manifested exactly what they wanted for us. And that's like your self-identity. You're just taking on what they want for you. You know, if you love to run, run. Just put a minimum amount of time of running a day, right? That's all, just a minimum amount, because consistently, if you're running every day, some days you'll run a marathon, some days you'll run 100 yards, but every day you're gonna run.
Hey, Dave, really grateful, seriously, for you doing this, like setting up these meetups and in particular with us today. I don't know if you talked about this already, but what's your take on gratitude? I know you talked about
gratitude.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite habits that I've been able to develop.
Oh.
I know you talked about it last
So gratitude relates exactly to every single thing that we're talking to. So gratitude has created the philosophies of my entire life. I can change your entire life. So let's start with the basis of gratitude itself is, you know, you have one choice for truth. You can look at something as half full or half empty. You can look at it on the positive side or the negative. So what do I start with? Eternal life. Nobody can prove on earth, never in the history of the world, have they ever been able to prove whether when you die, that's it, or when you die, you get to live forever. So my decision in gratefulness and gratitude was, what would a better life be? One, believing that it ends or it continues. So I chose continue. Right? Then you look at the activity of everything you do and it's like, do I have to do this or do I get to do this?
So what kind of things do you do to practice?
So first of all, I say thank you. You know, I say think, believe, thank you. I make it every day. I tell people, start by trying. And I promise you, 99% of all people cannot do this, including me. But try to say thank you before you go to bed and when you wake up for 30 straight days. It'll change your life. Change your life. I spent 9 months on stage telling people to do this as a hypocrite because I'd miss 1 or 2 days all the time. But man, when you start looking, what happens is, think about this. Anything in your life, I can tell you why you'd be thankful for. The difference is you got the pragmatic time thing in your way again. So, you know, you get stopped at a red light and you're late picking up your kid for basketball. Thank you is not coming in your mind for that red light. But it should, because the universe is working all around you and it may have just stopped you from something else, right? Like, I have a grateful attitude and I'm grateful for everything. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And I just let it unravel. It's like a puzzle to me. You know, if you get a piece of, you know, 1,000-piece puzzle, you're looking at the box, you know, let's say this is it. And you look at this piece and you're like, oh, this doesn't fit anywhere. It's so hard to be thankful for that piece. Meanwhile, 20 years later, you know, let's say the puzzle took you 20 years. 20 years later, you're like, oh my goodness. Oh, thank God I have this piece. It fits perfectly to finish the puzzle. But 20 years previous, no idea. So why not just trust in gratitude that there's a bigger picture, a big puzzle that you can't humanly, it's impossible because of the infinity of time and space, the human mind can't comprehend it. So we give frustration and resistance because of it. Instead of, the universe is testing our faith. And faith is the aggregate of what you think, say, do, believe, and those unconscious competencies, genetics, energetics. Why not use gratitude as your faith? And that's what allowance or surrender, and it's so hard for people that want to be in control to understand that you are in control when you're forgiving, right? Accountable gives you complete control. When you can say, I attracted this to my life, I'm accountable. What am I supposed to learn from it? You have complete control of your life. When you make your objective of your activity of learning from it, when that's, you'll enjoy your journey. When that's your only objective is to learn from it, in other words, expand, right? Learning is expanding. I'm gonna expand from this, whatever it is. In the short term, it may seem as if it's completely divergent from what I'm looking for. Maybe it is, because maybe you're going the wrong way. Only time will tell, and we can't see the future. Right? Unfortunately, when we can't see the future, we get afraid. So what we do is we put faith in the past, and then we end up getting exactly what we got in the past. Same people, the same problems, and we don't expand. That's great. Thank you. All right. More questions?
When did you become an investor? When did you start investing?
When did I become an investor?
On a slightly larger scale.
A larger scale?
But I mean, you could buy rookie MBA cards.
Yeah. That's an investor. So number one, you know, I've always invested in myself. So that's where my biggest investment was made. Whether I ballsed up and took $100,000 law loans or I didn't work to practice football, which was like a huge investment in myself because that was a big risk. You know, ended up getting a scholarship. These just investments, but money investments. When I made my first 9 months out of law school, I started investing because I had enough money to invest.
Nine months,
9 months out of law school. So, but I invested all my money. Like I saved, but I invested. I just invested in stocks and real estate, and I kept winning. So I kept investing and investing and winning and winning and winning and winning, and I was all set up to do well. And then I made bad assumptions and bad moves and lost it all. And that's when great lessons came of what my life was should be reverting to. And a lot of the qualities I had before. I just had lost some of them, weren't paying attention to some of them. And then other ones I didn't have, and I pretend, like, you know, I was very insecure. You know, like very, I was an overseller, bad, you know, like just different things. All the things I hated about my dad, that's who I was. And he was very successful. But anybody could invest. Like, you know, it wasn't the size of the investment. Like, I think investment's a practice as well. And I take things, one thing I do very, I think more OCD-like is percentages of distribution. So I think, you know, like I said, I predetermine when to sell things out because I want to take my emotions out of it. So when I'm making an investment, when I put the money in, I'm like, okay, this is what I want out without the circumstantial perceptions and assumptions going on. So I'm pretty strict on it. Okay, this is why I'm investing, because I think the market's going to go up. Here's how I'm going to distribute my money backwards. I distribute it forward the same way. So out of every $100 that I make, everything has to come through me. So I actually distribute it to most of it to my wife. Then it goes to my kids. Then it goes to my mom. Then it goes to the rest of my family. Then my city, my community more than my city. Community, then the country, then the world. So every $100, I know a certain percent goes to the Unstoppable Foundation, right? A certain percentage goes to the Crescent Moon Foundation for scholarships for kids in the country. Certain percentage goes to, yeah, yeah. And but it's always coming through. And then if I need anything, I have to ask. And I purposely set it up. I got to ask my wife for, I do. I, you know what I mean? I literally have to ask. And so that way I'm creating a flow, and she feels empowered because she's giving, I'm giving. But before I was like, it's very scarce. Everything was for me. And then everyone had to ask me, can I have this? Can I have, right? No, it's just distributed. And it's just a different philosophy, but I do it on both sides, right? Because I'm going to have the investment distributed back to me with a predetermined percentage. It's just math to me. And even to that, like, part of the distribution of what I do goes into, I believe money attracts money. I actually believe that if all the money was gathered up in the whole world, it would redistribute itself to the same people, because it's energy. It's a currency, an object of energy that flows through a current of energy that allows you to attract. That's what money is. Same with faith. Faith is an object of energy that you put into the current.
The sweatshop worker who's putting forth all that energy into the garment that they're making, isn't that the raw energy?
That is one form of raw energy for sure. But here, take, like, because we had the same thing in Africa, right? So this is where, once again, what if we could take and help empower people? So you have a sweatshop worker that is living to eat, right? And putting all their sweat and energy in making Nikes, you know, or another tennis shoe. They can never get ahead. You create a merry-go-round, right? Kind of like my idea about everybody giving their $1,000. So let's say we were a very, very poor tribe, and we all were just working so we would have water and food for us and our kids, living in mud shacks in the Masai Mara. But then I said to everyone, look, we're all making $1 a day. I just need a little bit of sacrifice. So what we're going to do is we're all going to live off of almost $1 a day, but we're going to take $1 a month and we're going to give it to one person in our tribe. So we got, you know, 12 people here. And so you get the first $12, and that's what first $12 allows you to buy a goat. And then the next month you bought a bricklaying machine with the $12. And then the next month you bought a cow. And the next month we bought a weave, you know, pretty soon, none of us are working in the sweatshop for $1 a day so we could feed our family, right? Because you got a fabric store, you have the bricklaying, right? you have the milk, you have the bricklaying, and all the other tribes are spending their dollars on us. And the merry-go-round gets bigger and bigger, and pretty soon, you know, we're buying you a house 1 month, you a house the next month. And that's exactly what we did in Africa and created the most wealthy tribe from one mama and a merry-go-round, creating a windfall. But that doesn't happen unless you take a step back. What happens to most people is they go to the sweatshop every day, and that's it. And analogously, that's what too many people do, right? We just go to the sweatshop every day. We never take a step back and say, what do I really want? What do I want? My thing is more important than why. You have to figure out what you want, and then you can determine why do I want it, and then adjust what you want. But too many people, they don't even know. They literally are just stuck in this almost hamster wheel. And there's so many books and movies and poems and everything about people that just get stuck. And I say, it's so easy to get out of it and ask for help.
So I got a question.
Yeah.
When you lost it all,
yeah,
how did you work it back up? How did you stay inspired? Were you already doing all the things you're doing now?
Yeah, I'm not doing everything. Now I'm expanding, man. So I was doing way less.
Yeah.
First of all, it was this progression, right? So when I actually lost all my money, I was already on a spiritual progression. So I had greater clarity. I had way less fear-based living when I lost my money than like 2 years previous, you know, when I was living in fear, in shallow, purposeless living. But what I did was got laser focused. I said to myself, finally, what do I want? Same with like when I did the long term, I want to buy my mom a house and a car. I was going to make money, but I was going to make it the right way. So how was that? I had this philosophy. I was going to wake up every morning and pray to God that it put at least 10 people in front of me I could help every day. And I was going to provide as much value as I could, be as productive as I could, and as accessible as I could. So I started taking a step back, looking through my black book back then. I'm like, all right, who do I know that's rich? So I want to make money. One thing I learned was a lot easier to make money off of rich people than it is poor. If you make money off of poor people, you need a whole bunch of poor people to make money. And that's really shitty, because not only do you need a whole bunch of them, but you're making money off of a whole bunch of people that probably doesn't have it. Why not just find one super rich dude and sell him? It's the same way with my coaching. You know, I coach month to month, I guarantee value. I'm a profit center to every one of my clients. Whatever I determine, if I can help first, if I can't help, I have other coaches that are experts in, you know, crypto or whatever, because I'm not. But, you know, I have really wealthy clients that, you know, I held to it and said, dude, give me $50,000 a month and I'll coach you. And the guy's like, what? Because I can get coached for $5,000-$10,000 as good as you. I'm like, yeah, but they're not going to guarantee you that they'll make you $100,000. They might be just as good, but I'm going to guarantee you one thing. You're going to pay me 50, you're going to make 100 every month. Can you see any reason you won't want to pay me? I'm putting 50 in your pocket. That's what I decided to do. So when I lost everything, I was laser focused. Anyone I ran into, I searched out, I went to events going, oh, you know, the owner of this team is going to be there. And I hunted him down, just like I told you I was going to hunt Warren Buffett down when the market went down. I just hunted him down. Just like, hey, I'm Dave Meltzer. You know, how can I be of service to you? Are you looking for anything? You know, yacht, a plane, a car, a boat, you know, diamonds. Tell me what are you looking for? And they all had something they were looking for. And I'm like, oh, how much you got for that? Like, what are you looking to pay? You know, someone told me they wanted Rolls Royce for $240,000. Then I'd use my energy to go find the Rolls Royce for $200,000 and make $40,000. So what if it took me a month? Most guys don't make $40,000 a month. I promise all of you guys, if I told you right now, a car and I got $240,000 for it, and even if the market was $260,000, in 1 month you all could find me one for $200,000. You just keep on asking people, I got $200,000 for that, I got $200,000. No, but you're wasting my time, man. Are you crazy? But there'll be someone out there, a little touch of favor of the universe, someone out there that needs that $200,000, and you got it right now. I got it. Boom, $40,000. That's how you make real money. And I don't care if people say, oh, you know people. I didn't know the guys that I made money with. I sought them out. I went to places where rich people are, and I just started asking. What do? I import, export. That's what I used to say. What? I was running the number one sports agency in the world at the time, right? Thank God I didn't lose my job, but I literally, people were like, what do you do? I'm like, I can find anything. I'm an import exporter. Really? I'm like, yeah, why, are you looking for something? Yeah, you know, I'm looking for, like, you know, I need $6 million in Q-tips. Okay. So, right? Literally, $6 million in Q-tips? What if I could only get it for $5.5, right? I'm negotiating on, what does it cost me? I'm putting my, but one deal a month, I'd much rather sell that than, like, go sell, you know, 600,000 people one Q-tip for a buck.
So I read it.
Oh, yeah, sorry. You finished it? Okay. Go ahead. No, go ahead. We'll go.
No, I read in your book that you said you were going to, like, I don't know if you said you were going to, you're going to start doing it.
Fifth Avenue? When I retire?
Yeah, maybe when you retire, but you're going to start buying just things that you could only get in China. And
yeah, yeah.
First person I've ever heard bring this up.
Yeah.
You just talked to me this other night.
Yeah, so in my book, yeah, so here's what the deal. So, and it, this is my retirement plan. This is before I started speaking and coaching, because that's really what I want to do, and write books. But I drove me crazy when people buy stuff and they're like, I saved this much money. Right? It freaks me out. I'm like, that's such perception. So I said, I'll go to China, find stuff that's unique, and not spend more than $100, and then bring it over onto Fifth Avenue and pay my money for, give champagne out, have beautiful men and women working for me, sports on TV, and I was gonna sit there drinking champagne during the day, watching SportsCenter all day and La Liga and the Chargers, whatever. And people come in and everything in the store will be like $5, $10, $20 grand, 90% off. And I guess, and I'll see all these ladies come in and be like, oh my God, I saved $18,000 on this watch. Meanwhile, it was like a one of a kind, you know, Chinese watch that, right? And make more money than anybody, just proving perception. What something is worth is very simple. You know that what something's worth? What somebody will pay for it. So get them to pay it. And you can buy stuff, right? You can buy stuff if you ask. I have such confidence that I'll never starve. He hears it to me all the time. We'll get like people on DM say like crazy stuff, right? And I'll just look at him like, yeah, but at least we'll never starve, right? We'll never starve. I could go anywhere. I mean, as a test, I could take all of you and say, look, I'll give you all $1,000 this week. Just go on LinkedIn and ask everybody what they need. Just for a, you know, give me a minimum. Let's say if I ask you guys, I'll give you each $1,000 this month. Give me a minimum of 15 minutes each for 7 days a week, right? I'll give you $1,000 this month for 15 minutes to go on LinkedIn and just find people with money on there by their title and just ask them, hey, do you need anything? I'll get you. Yeah, I'm an import export. Whatever you need. What do you need? Watch how much business we have. I can start a company today. Try it out. Or just go to the garage sale and be the last one there or the first one there. Try that one. Or go reverse engineer online. You know, find something that sells really fast and figure out where to get it.
What do you use to find your, you use Car Guru for cars?
Auto Trader, Car Guru.
Online, what's your, what do you like using? Because I'm thinking of, with a friend, maybe a little Amazon.
Yeah.
We're going to do like, you're all my people, so I was thinking, you know.
Everybody's my people.
I'm saying all you.
Yeah.
Use the tinfoil. They say blocks radiation by
yeah,
a certain percentage. So I was saying we could like go to China and try and make a couple of these because the tinfoil is mad cheap, and then try and sell these and just sell it, put it
on. So I got a girl that does that, Sparkles, right? Is her name Sparkles? Yeah, the girl in Atlanta?
Skittles.
Yeah, so Skittles had this exact idea.
Oh, yeah.
And she basically went over there with like 16 suitcases or something.
Oh, and just picked up.
She just bought them.
Like 3 cents, coming back with some like $30 each.
Yeah.
Made a killing.
Killing. She became a millionaire like this. It's the same philosophy. Like this. Because she thinks the way that I think. right? Get out of your own way. It doesn't, don't get so busy working you forget to make money. If that's what you want to do. Like, if you remember, Jeff, what I really loved about what you said was, I like to be a trainer because I enjoy the face. Like, you enjoy the, good, man. Then spend 6 hours a day enjoying what you do. Because you, people don't realize this. I believe this to the bottom of my heart. Nobody does what they love. I don't believe anyone does what they love. I believe that we love what we do. But we've already programmed ourselves. We love what we do, but we don't do what we love. Right? We don't do it. We actually have trained ourselves to enforce ourselves with purpose to love what we do. And so if that's the probability and the possibility of my life, then I'm going to force myself to love what I do. So how do I do that? I find the power of what I'm doing. And I use, you know, everybody knows this guy in New York. What's the lowest like job of a traffic cop, right? I mean, of being a cop is like a traffic cop. Yeah, nobody wants to be a
cop too.
Yeah, like least like position as a cop would be like a traffic cop. But everybody knows that traffic cop in New York that like dances and whistles. You guys all seen him? Yeah, 100% every time. He loves what he does. Nope. He learned, right? He doesn't do what he loves. He loves what he does. There's no way that guy's like, I want to be the best traffic cop in the world. But meanwhile, he makes a ton of money, right? Appearances. He has a brand. There's all these things. He can sell merch off of himself, you know? Why? Because he's learned to love what he does. I take out the trash, one of my favorite things to do, and I used to hate it. I learned to love taking out the trash. Why? Because I use it as a vehicle to think about what I want. I use it as an escape. My life continues to expand, and if you've got three teenage daughters and a wife having menopause and a 9-year-old son and a million people always hitting you up for stuff, man, it's easy to find a bag of trash and look like a hero and be like, hold on one second. Everybody yelling, right? Hold on, I gotta take the trash out. No one's gonna be like, no. Right? You're at a friend's house, everybody's hammering you. Can I take a picture with you? Can I get your autograph? Oh, I saw you on this. And you're like, dude, I just got done with a really long day. I don't want to talk about the playbook and, you know, what Ray Lewis is like, or like, just I need a break for a minute. I'm like, whoa, trash. Oh my gosh, that looks full. Can I take that out for you? And like my friend's wife's like, why aren't you more like him? He's amazing. Meanwhile, I'm just escaping because I love taking the trash out now because it can go out 5 minutes, you know, calmly. I'm breathing. I come back in.
It's a genius because it builds you on another level too. You're a hero when you come back. So you exponentially did something for yourself by doing something small and something important.
Yeah. All day long though. I mean, I made my first $1 million selling legal research online and everybody's like, you're so lucky. Truth is, when I graduated and I worked really hard in law school, my friends were calling me an idiot. My mom was calling me an idiot. You're not gonna be a real lawyer, dude. You're on moot court. You're not gonna be a real lawyer. You got an oil and gas job. You can go sell internet. 9 months later, they're all begging me for a job, telling me how lucky I was.
All right, couple things that you're a little curious of. I forgot that question. So, sorry, your name is
Justin.
Justin.
Another J.
Okay, so you're around David a lot, right?
Yeah.
We're not around David as much. You know David's genius. Maybe you see him and you're like, wow, you have an answer to this question that I'd like for you to answer. Like, can you pose a question to David that references like your intimate, like sort of relationship so that we can
great question.
That's deep within David, like, you know? Like,
yeah, he, right, David, yeah.
Yeah.
He wants you to ask me something, you know, that I...
Give me a minute, let someone else ask me.
You know, my other question was,
yeah.
You're genius. Like, you got it together now, you're rolling, you got a lot going on, so I feel like your system, you kind of like me, in a sense, like, your system's there, you just have to work your system,
mm-hmm.
And like, it's a little different dynamic. You built up the structure, you're taking care of it almost, in a sense. I know you're still building. But when you were younger, and like, say when you were going to law school, before that, before you knew yourself, how did you handle things, work through things, because I have like issues that good. I bang my head against, and you know, and I'm like,
that's a good question.
How do I handle that? Like, yeah. You know?
So when I was younger, I was way in my own way, right? So my philosophy was, one, just out of necessity, I was laser focused on making money, right? I wanted
my,
like five. My mom, you know, my dad left, 2-bedroom apartment, 6 kids. I was happy, but like I saw my mom crying because the car broke down, or working 2 jobs, put it in a station wagon, packing our bologna sandwiches for dinner, and then filling up turnstiles at the 7-Eleven so we could eat. And in my head, I was like, no. Like, so I still get choked up, but my whole thing was, I wasn't gonna quit. Like, if I had this try me attitude, like I wasn't a why me guy. Like, why is this my life? I was like an F you guy. Like, try me, are you kidding? You say I can't play football just cause I'm tiny? I'll show you. You say I can't be rich cause I come from this neighborhood, right? Oh, I'll show you, you know, I don't have to do. And so my whole thing was, whether it was junior high school, college, I would outwork you. I was just, and I was so far in my way, and I wasted so much energy. And it wasn't for me, but it was for the recognition. But it was for my ego. It wasn't for me. I'm never one of those guys, like, until I started making a real lot of money, like, I wore the same suit. I was the guy that I am today. But when I started making so much money, it was all for me. It was like, I was feeding off of people recognizing me. I'm like, oh, if I get a Porsche, you know, if I get a Ferrari, people are like, oh shit, he's 25, he has a Ferrari, right? I wanted them to say that. It was like, I didn't even like the fucking Ferrari. But meanwhile, what was really happening was people thought I was an asshole, right? And girls, you know, I would joke around, but they probably figured out my true anatomy before I had a chance, because I had this stupid car. I was projecting everything. So, but the one thing that I always had was just this work ethic. Like, I was just gonna outwork you, and I was hyper competitive to outwork you. You know, when I made money as a millionaire, I got a little bit lucky, because I made a choice to sell stuff. And the average sales guy, you know, made $200,000 to $300,000. I was the top guy. I made over $1 million, but I worked 3 jobs. Like, most of the guys were older, they had wives and kids, you know. If you counted the hours that I worked, right, I was just outworking them. It was all math to me. It wasn't, you know, yeah, I got a good job, but it wasn't one that was gonna make you $1 million. But when you're working, you know, efficient, my whole thing, efficient, effective, and statistically successful, like, you know, not going on dates, like, you know, literally eating on the road, waking up at 4, driving out 3 hours in my territory, you know, all night already having organ. I mean, it was just ridiculous what I gave up. Years. I basically have liberated you, right? I've allowed you to shine your light, because we got to meet and I got you thinking a different way. Then you watch more of my videos and they mean something different. But you can watch my videos, they'll mean more and more and more. Just like I read different stuff every single year, and it means Think and Grow Rich, Course in Miracles. All these things mean more and more to me. The Bible, go read the Old or New Testament. It'll change your life. So will my videos. So, you know, just today, I was choked up on the plane because my daughter is going to be the keynote speaker at her graduation. Right? I was like, and that's from watching me. And, you know, I love the first thing, because it's that first thing everyone says, Justin, do you help her with her speech? And the truth is, I tried. She had it all. She wrote it herself. And she presented it to me, and I had one comment, that was all I did. And so it wasn't like, dad did this for you, you know, he's a professional speech writer. You know, I can't perform it for her either, but she had to write it, get it approved, be a finalist, try out and make it. And I'm thinking, man, that's something that she'll always remember. You can't take that away. I know what that's like. And it could inspire her to find a whole love that she's genetically disposed to or something. Same with you, man. That's the way I feel about all of you. We get him, he cries. I send him stuff all the time. It's like, this kid, Zach Firestone, just showed up in New York last week. I didn't remember. He's like, I didn't remember. And he's like, I'm here because I haven't seen Dave in 3 years, but I came to I met him 3 years ago and he asked how he could help me. And I was looking for a job out of college and he gave me three people to talk to in New York and I ended up getting a job and my whole life has changed, blah, 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 blah. Why? Because he just asked for help. That wasn't their year. It was all about me. And I think it's okay. Like, you go through stages. The four values, right? Personal values, your character, integrity, your experiential values, your giving values and receiving values. Those are not balanced. They're balanced according to what you're trying to have clarity, balance, and focus for. So, for example, in a period of your life, you may just want to experience it. I'm going to go to Europe for a year. Right? I'm going to go meditate on, you know, the Ganges, you know, in India. That's experiential. Are you not going to have a balanced life because you spent a year of your life meditating? No, you'll probably have a more balanced life. But, you know, in the end, it'll all balance itself out. But I think too many people try to keep this balance. You know, like true entrepreneurs, they're always like, how do you keep such great balance? I'm like, what are you talking about, dude? I sacrificed so much as an entrepreneur early on. Yeah, now I have, most people could not give their wife, in the position I'm in, if you were starting, 30 minutes to your wife, 30 minutes to your 9-year-old, two minutes, let alone have those kids and be with, no, you can't have that balance. But the more focused you are in balancing the values according to what you want, the more you can get to a point where you can have control on the balance. But if you're enjoying all giving or enjoying all receiving or enjoying experiences, meaning having a positive perspective, expanding and growing from that, and all of you understand acceleration and exponential growth, because if not, I got to repeat it one more time because it changed my life. Yeah, so if you stay consistent and persistent, enjoying the pursuit of your potential, you get acceleration and exponential growth. Acceleration and exponential growth will allow you to have a hockey stick life. Shit will get out of control for the better. But here's the problem, once again, we don't have the ability to understand the infinity of time. So here's what happens to almost everyone, including me. Say you're doing what you're supposed to be doing, and you do it for 6 years. And 6 years from now, we meet up again, and I'm like, how's it going? And you're like, Dave, I have enjoyed the consistent, persistent pursuit of, here's the six things that I've given an hour. You know, you go through the whole thing, and you're like, but Dave, I'm pissed at you. I'm like, why? Well, because I'm only 25% of the way to my minimum goal, right? Because we talk, you know, minimum, I want to make $1 billion or whatever. 6 years. And now you got maybe, you know, a wife or a kid or girlfriend or boyfriend or who knows. And you got a lot of pressure and your parents are like, dude, you spent 6 years doing what you're doing. You're not even a quarter way there or just a quarter way there. Most people quit. But if you're doing what I'm telling you, you get acceleration, exponential growth. 3 years from now, you'll be 50% of the way there. And that's when everybody quits. Almost, because now you've been 9 years in and you're in your mind, because of man-made time, 9 years, 50%, at least another 9, if never, right? Because that's the way, but no, with enjoyment of the consistent, persistent pursuit of your potential, yeah, you're right. How long till you're 100?
One and a half.
Yeah. You're almost there, and it drives me nuts because the guys are doing it, and the women are doing exactly what they're supposed to be doing, and they're this close, and they're like, oh, I wanted to buy a house, you know, my mom and dad, they're getting older and, you know, everyone's shitting on, you know, my self-identity is going downhill because, you know, I'm this loser now. Wait, even better than, you know, a year and a half being 100%, right? Where are you in 3/4 of a year? 200%, right? And half of that, 400, half of that, 800, half of that, 1600. Now, that's what I'm living now. I'm on the bonus rounds. Yeah, is it a lot easier in the bonus rounds to stay consistent, persistent, and enjoy it? Yes, it is, but I'll tell you this, without a doubt, when I started on this journey, I enjoyed it, not as much as now, but I enjoyed it. Like, I had this perspective, I made all kinds of mistakes, I learned from them, but I stayed super positive and inspired, not as much as now, but more than most people. And it just kept, you know, I've seen it in several business. I mean, I have different businesses now, but I see in several businesses of mine, including, you know, the one I'm in now, where everybody's like, oh man, you know, we've gone this whole path and we're only 50% of the way there. Now, for me, it took 2 years to get to 50%. So I was like, dude, we're only months away from being 100%. And you all are tanking. You guys are leaving, you fools. 6 months from now, we're gonna be at 100%. And now we're on our way to 200%. That's what happened with my Instagram. Like, year ago, December, Justin was there. I said, what's your biggest fear? I said, shit breaking. And they're like, you don't got that many followers. What do you mean? I was like, yeah, but it keeps on doubling. Like, people like my stuff. They look at the comments. I just don't know. It scares me. And we're very particular. Like, I could have a way bigger following, but I want to have following where, like, you guys are in it. People that are learning, not just, hello, sir. Can you send me $50? I don't want those followers. And I like to help everyone. If you need $50, I want the follower that says, hey, man, I need $50. Can you help me learn how to get $50? Do you know someone I could talk to? I'm willing to do this. Not, you know, stroke me a check for $50. All right, last question. Is that right?
Yeah.
You're going to ask it.
It's less a question, but I think I want you to explain something that I learned as an intern had the biggest impact on my life, which is the subtlety of success and the spirit of excellence.
Yeah, and the empty mile.
Yeah.
Okay. There's a fine line between the success in your life and not getting what you want. It's a subtle thing, and it comes from the consistent behavior. That doesn't take very long. It's a spirit. A spirit is something that inspires you, right? The spirit of excellence, I call it. It's the switch that you need to turn on. That's the little things. And those little things, like being a student of your calendar, putting minimums of time, doing things now, saying thank you. Think about the most critical things in my life are all subtle things. You know, I didn't say you had to go work out 8 hours a day. You know, I didn't have to say you have to go raise $2 million. These are very subtle things. And if you watch, and I highly suggest everyone having mentorship in their life, right? And that mentorship comes from books and podcasts, but also a personal mentor, someone who sits in the situation that you want. Watch the subtleties of their success. You'll see just a spirit that's a little bit different. The difference, even in different levels of professionalism, there's a subtlety of success of the guys that are that much farther along. There's successful basketball players, then there's LeBron James. Why? Not because he's necessarily the greatest athlete on earth. No, there's a subtlety of success to LeBron James. He'll be the first one in the locker room, the last one to leave. Very simple subtlety of success is showing up, being consistent. How long can you stay focused? Finding your strengths in society's depiction of your weakness. Let me explain that. That's a subtlety of success. SAP, right? They have trouble finding quality end user testers for their software because SAP, the big company, the software. Why? Well, because human beings aren't hyper-focused and don't want to do the same thing again and again. But our society told us, you know, people with autism or people on the spectrum, that's a weakness. Really? Because if I put them at SAP, they're hyper-focused and they love to do things again and again and again. So now SAP is hiring 40,000 people that have autism, giving them purpose, giving them fulfillment, making them feel special. Because now our society says, oh, this is special, right? This is value. So find your value in your weaknesses. The strengths will be obvious where your value is. But where can I move my weakness to a different place? You know, I was in trouble all the time for talking a lot. Well, there's a place for talking a lot. It's not in the classroom or in, you know, church or temple or, you know, but, you know, They were projecting their insecurity on me, saying I'll never be successful because I talk a lot. Really? Put it in the right place. Put it in the right place with the right purpose. So the subtleties of success are going to what truly exponentially make the difference. And why is that? For me, it's simply the time, the exponential factor of consistency. If you do something every day, it's 1 × 2 × 3 × 4 × 5 × 6 × 7. It's really hard. But that's the subtlety of success. To me, it's the consistent, persistent behavior, whatever it is, the body, soul, all of it's connected by consistent. 10,000 new data inputs go into your cellular memory, go to the neural pathways in your subconscious, which creates 40,000 of the same thoughts every day, which goes to your unconscious competency, your energy, and your genetics. It actually can activate and deactivate genetics that are good for you, and that creates the subtlety. That creates the difference of why is this person here and this person here and this person here. It's literally what they're doing every day. It's not just winning one lottery ticket. Most of those people end up losing all of it. Let me give you my cell phone. You guys took the effort. If you need anything, just text me, call me, DM me. I'll answer your questions. You won't get more than 5 minutes from me, but I'll answer it. If you need contacts, ideas, just run it by me, man. I always have a minute or two for everybody. Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed today's episode in any way or found any value, screenshot it, share it, however you'd like. My only ask is you help me empower others to be happy.